everybody. As Hanukkah is slowly leaving us, and now we bring ourselves back into the regular swing of things from the year, I thought it might be appropriate to talk about an interesting topic that comes up in Hilchos Hanukkah. Has a little bit to do with Hanukkah, but really has more to do with Yerideya and everyday life, the Yesodos that come out of this Shaila. So that is the following. The Shulchan Aruch, Arachayim, Siman Tafresh, Ayin Zayin, Siv Dalet. The Shulchan Aruch tells us as follows. What if a person has leftover oil in his menorah after Hanukkah is over? So we're not talking about the oil that's left in the jar that I bought in the store. That's for sure okay. You can do whatever you want with that because that was not specifically used for any mitzvah yet. But what if I poured oil into my cups and it turns out that there's a bunch of cups that have some leftover oil after Hanukkah is over? So what do I do with that oil? So obviously nowadays this is not such a compelling shaila to us because we just throw it out, right? None of us are so skimpy, none of us really need the oil that badly that we go and save it and we're going to put it somewhere. But obviously just conceptually we'll talk about the Shulchan Aruch's case and we'll bring out very important klalim and yerideya that come out from this question. So the Shulchan Aruch says as follows, if I have leftover oil after Hanukkah is over, so the Shulchan Aruch tells us, "Osa la madura v'sarfa bifnei atzma." I have to take all those leftover wicks and all those leftover oil that's left in the cups that I already poured for the mitzvah, and I have to burn it. Why? Says the Shulchan Aruch, because sha'rei kvar huktzu l'mitzvasa, because it was already set aside for a mitzvah. I already poured it into my cups to be used for Hanukkah. I already put these wicks into the cups to be burned for Hanukkah. So I no longer have any right to use them for any other purpose. Says the Beis Yosef over there. Why is it that I have to get rid of them? So the Beis Yosef says, because once I put it into the cups, they now become like a dvar mitzvah, and no longer can anyone have any sort of benefit from it. Says the Beis Yosef, it's similar to a case where we know a person who builds a sukkah is not allowed to have any sort of hana from the sukkah itself on Sukkot. Obviously, after Sukkot is over, once the mitzvah is done, so I'm allowed to get any hana I want. However, during Sukkot itself, since I specifically set this aside for the duration of the Yontif of Sukkot, even if my sukkah falls down, I am not allowed to derive any benefit from the sukkah. Says the Beis Yosef, the same as over here. Once I pour that oil into my cup, I obviously want it to burn down till it's finished. Otherwise, I wouldn't have put it in. I would have put in less oil. So says the Beis Yosef, this is like the sukkah on Sukkot itself. The same way on Sukkot itself, since I set it aside for the mitzvah that it should not be used for the duration of this Yontif, therefore I'm not allowed to have any hana from the sukkah. So to the oil, once I pour it into the cups, even after Hanukkah, I'm not allowed to have any hana because I set it aside that it should burn down all the way till the oil was totally gone. The Magen Avraham says over there in Tafrei Shayin Zayin, one should be careful also not to put all this extra oil into a jug and leave it for next year's Hanukkah candles, because he says, obviously, with the passing of a year, someone is going to, pugum might be one idea, but the Magen Avraham suggests a different one, that by the time next year rolls around, probably someone is going to mishandle it, misuse it, and do something else that he's not supposed to do with the oil, and chances are you're not going to be as careful as you should be with that oil. So the Magen Avraham says it's really not correct to do that either. Says the Shulchan Aruch, now what happens in the following case? And here's where it's very interesting when it comes to Yerideya, when it comes to kitchen and taruvah shailas. The Shulchan Aruch tells us as follows, what happens if I have a big jar of oil that I did not pour into my Hanukkah menorah? I have a big jar of oil that I plan to use in the kitchen. And here, after Hanukkah is over, my little kid, let's say, goes, takes the leftover oil that's left in my menorah, and he pours it into the big bucket of oil. So you're going to tell me that my whole big jar of oil is usser? Or is there a way that I can use the whole jar of oil because I want to use it in my kitchen? So that's the question. So obviously we have a principle in Yerideya that shishim, whenever I have 60 times more from the davar usser, so 60 times more can be mevatel, can totally outdo the isser which fell in to this davar heter. So the same would apply over here. If I have 60 times as much in the jar of oil, and now a little bit of oil, my kids go and pour the leftover oil from my menorah into the big jar of heter. So if it's 60 times as much, it would be permissible for me to use, because now it becomes batel. However, what's the halacha? Ask the Shulchan Aruch, what's the halacha in a case where it falls in and there is not 60 times as much in the jar? So what do I do in that case? My child goes and pours in the extra oil that I have in my menorah into a heter jug that's in my kitchen. What do I do now if there's not 60 times as much in the jug and it cannot be mevatelet? So the Shulchan Aruch says over here, you are not allowed to add on any more oil in order that it should add up to 60 times more, because that is called ein mevatlin iser lechatchila. A person is not allowed to go ahead and set up a situation where he's creating a bittel. If aser, a davar aser falls into a mixture which is 60 times more, okay, so it happened on its own. But for me to create that situation, for me to go ahead and add in order that now it should become mutter, that is not permissible. So right away,
you find a vat that's 60 times more than the jug.
Yeah.
And you pour the jug into that.
That's usher.
That's
aim of atlas or lechatchila. Yeah, that would be the same. So the question that the Shach and the Taz and many other achronim, the Chavis Das, they're all bothered with the following question. In Yaradeya, Simon Sadi Tesiv Vav, the Shulchan Aruch writes, we have a principle, aim of atlas nisr lechatchila, with regard to many different isurim. Where does this isur come from? So the Chidushi Arim writes in his Tshuvas, quoting from the Chassam Sofer, that this isur comes from, it's like a harama, it's like a legal fiction. You're right, the Torah told you there's a way out of getting out of such problems when you have mixtures that get mixed together. You can have shishim, but to go ahead and do it on your own, that's a harama, that's not a nice thing to do, that's not a right thing to do. Hashem knows what you're doing wrong, and therefore that is not the proper way to lead our lives, to be mevatel nisr lechatchila. Says the Achronim do point out, however, that when it comes to an isur midirabbanan, as we see in Shabbos Daf Kuf Lamed Tesam and Aleph, coming up in the Daf Yomi soon, that one is permitted to do a harama, one is permitted to carry out a legal fiction. Based on this, the Bechar Shor writes, when it comes to Mechiras Chametz on Pesach, he thought that it's not right to sell Chametz Be'en, because it's like a legal fiction on an Issa Daraisa. By Rabbi Matzeh's an Issa Daraisa, he assumes that Rabbeinu Tam is of the opinion that if you have Taruvas Chametz, let's say you just have some Chametz mixed into something else, so that, and it's not the main ingredient, so then we assume that's only by Rabbi Matzeh Midrabbanan. So the Bechar Shor points out that he thinks that it's questionable to do a Mechiras Chametz on Chametz Be'en. There were some Achronim that were Machmer like this, because it's only right to do a Ha'arama, it's only right to do a legal fiction on an Isser Midrabbanan, but on an Isser Daraisa, we should try as much as we can to stay away from it. Okay, so by Mechiras Chametz, we'll talk about it then, what exactly the basis is for the Heter and why we do it. But the bottom line is, in Shulchan Aruch, it says in Yeredeya, that Eim Avat L'Nisser L'Chatchila is a clear cut halacha, which we learn from the Gemara in Beitza, and the Shulchan Aruch over there says, however, when it comes to an Isser Midrabbanan, if you have a scenario where an Isser Midrabbanan falls into a pot, and the pot is not 60 times as much, one has every right in the world to add on more heter into the pot in order that it should be 60 times overpowering, it should totally overpower the Dabar HaAsser Midrabbanan that fell in. So the Shach and the Taz and all the Achronim ask, this seems to be an apparent contradiction. Why is it that in Shulchan Aruch Yerodeya, the Shulchan Aruch tells us that if you have a Dabar HaAsr that falls into a pot, and there isn't 60 times as much in the pot, one is allowed to add on in order to be Mevatel the Dabar HaAsr? And why is it that when it comes to Hanukkah, if a child or someone goes ahead and pours the Asr oil from my candles into the big jug of oil, and there's not 60 times as much, why is it that over there, the Shulchan Aruch says clearly that one is not allowed to add on in order to be Matur this whole mixture together? So that is the question that the Achronim pose, which seems to be an apparent contradiction between the two Pesachim and Shulchan Aruch.
Can you use the extra Shem in Shabbos? Can you copy there
Shabbos? No, because Chanukah we assume it's Asr L'Shtamash La'ira. Chanukah we assume you're not allowed to derive benefit, but on Shabbos you have to derive benefit. Right? Shabbos, the whole point of the Hadlakas Ner Shabbos is for Kavod Shabbos, Onik Shabbos, or Shalom Bayis, whatever it is, but you have to have benefit. In fact, there's an interesting case that we mentioned yesterday in the shiur. The Gemara does tell us in Perek Bama Madlikin that even the shmanim, even the oils that you're not allowed to use for Shabbos, you are allowed to use for Chanukah. Everything's kosher for Neres Chanukah. Just we'll put this on the side for a minute. Everything's kosher for Neres Chanukah. There's nothing that you can use for Neres Chanukah. So there's an interesting riddle. What's the one type of oil that would be kosher for only Neres Shabbos, but not for Neres Chanukah? It's an interesting case. How do you ever come up with a case? The Gemara tells us everything that's kosher for Neiros, even something that's pasul for Neiros Shabbos, is kosher for Neiros Chanukah. So how can you come up with a case which directly relates to your question? How do you come up with a case where something would be kosher only for Neiros Shabbos and not for Neiros Chanukah? So the answer to that is, if you have Shemen Shal Shvius, because we have a halacha la'achla v'lo lahafsid, if I have Shvius, so the Shvius products have to be used, they can't be wasted. So since the halacha is that Neiros Chanukah, you're not allowed to derive any benefit from, you can't have any pleasure from it, so I'm not allowed to use Shemen Shel Shvius for my Neiros Chanukah. Why? because I'm not allowed to derive any pleasure, and that's called the achav lo lehepsin. I'm wasting it. As far as the Torah is concerned, it's being wasted. No one's enjoying it. However, when it comes to Neir Shabbos, the whole point of Neir Shabbos is to enjoy it. The whole point is to actually use the candles. If you don't use the candles, you're not allowed to make a bracha. So therefore, we assume that Shem and Shel Shviyas would be permissible to use for the Neir Shabbos, but not for the Neir Chanukah, which has a lot to do with what you're saying. There is some differentiation. There is a distinction between Neir Chanukah and Neir Shabbos. So this is the question that the Achronim are bothered with, whether a person is allowed to add on to a mixture which is only Aser Midirabbanan or not. Oh, Dabar She'esh L'Matir and the Achronim do talk about. So they say, is that really called a Dabar She'esh L'Matir because next year I'm going to use it? Do you have to wait that long to be called a Dabar She'esh L'Matir? That's a big discussion. The Magen Avraham does raise that point, and many Achronim pick up on that. It's not such a simple thing to call this a Dabar She'esh L'Matir. So Shlomo Zalman points out that he thinks the answer could be as follows. When it comes to Neiris Chanukah, so he claims that Neiris Chanukah asam chachamim kehektish. The Chacham assumed that Neiris Chanukah is patterned off the Neiris of the Beis HaMikdash, and since the whole Neis of Chanukah had a lot to do with the Beis HaMikdash, so therefore, the same way the Beis HaMikdash, Hektish is Aser, so too, I'm not allowed to derive any sort of benefit, any pleasure from my leftover oil that is left over after Chanukah. Now, Rav Shlomo Zalman qualifies a little bit. He says, you can't say it's really Siri Hana. I mean, obviously this is not, so he says it's like Bizayan Hektish, the same way we find by Truma, a person's not allowed to destroy Truma, he's not allowed to throw it into a mixture which won't be permissible to be eaten by anybody. So the same thing over here, that's what Shlomo Zalman claims. This is a little bit of a questionable suggestion because, as we pointed out, it's not so clear to say that there is a connection between the Neiris Chanukah that we do Bizman Hazeh and the Neiris of the Beis HaMikdash. Many, many Achronim, the Pnei Yeshua is Barosham, but there are many Achronim that question such an assumption. It's not so clear that our lighting of Neiris Chanukah has anything to do with the lighting of the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. There seems to be so many differences, so many distinctions between the Neiris Chanukah that we do and the Neiris of the menorah. So Rav Shlomo Zalman's suggestion is what to think about. Another suggestion that the Chavis Das gives, which will lead us into another interesting question to ponder, the Chavis Das thinks that there's a difference between Isuri Hana and Isuri Achila. Says the Chavis Das as follows. When does the Shulchan Aruch say that when I have a mixture that's mixed together and I don't have shishim against it, that I am allowed to add on to that mixture and be mevatel it? When is that? That is only when we're talking about Isuri Achila. Why? Because the problem by Isuri Achila is that a person is not allowed to taste the Dabar HaAsur. He's not allowed to have that Dabar HaAsur taste in his mouth. So therefore, the Shulchan Aruch says in such a case, if you have an Issur D'Rabbanan that falls in, and you don't yet have shishim against the Issur D'Rabbanan, so new add-on, you'll add on a little bit, and by adding on, now you're no longer going to taste the Dabar HaAsur. However, when it comes to something which is Asur because of Isuri Hana, says the Chavis Das, what does it help that I'm going to add on? My jug used to be full this much, and now, because of displacement, because I put in some more oil that was Aser for my menorah, now I'm getting Hana because it's going to have a little bit more. It's going to be a little more full. It's going to last longer now. So how can you tell me, now that I have Shishim, what are you going to say? Now I'm not having Hana? I am having Hana. What do you mean? I have more oil in my jug, so it's not really helping me so much. So that's what the Chavis Das claims, that there would be a marked difference between Isuri Achila and Isuri Hana, when the Shulchan Aruch says that by an Isur D'Rabbanan a person has a right to add on in order to make it mutter, that's only by Isuri Achila. Why? Because Isuri Achila, once you have 60 times as much as the Dabar HaAsur, we assume you no longer will be able to taste the Asur, the piece of Isur that fell in. When it comes to Isuri Hana, as much as you might add on, in the end of the day, I'm going to have more volume than I had before I started, and therefore the Chavis Das assumes that would not be permissible according to the Shulchan Aruch. This raises a modern-day shaila when it comes to the kashrus of veal. Now, everyone's going to wonder, what does that have to do with our discussion? So there has been a question that's been raised by many kashrus agencies that veal is not so simple that we are allowed to eat it. Why not? So veal, as we know, is a kosher animal. Veal is something that, it's a cow, right? It's a calf. What was that? Yeah, so it's a young calf. So what's the story? What could be wrong with veal? So Rav Moshe already writes a tshuva about the veal that there's tzar b'lechayim, right? That we know that they torture the veal a lot and they feed them, they force feed them and they keep them in the dark in order they should grow in a certain way. Okay, so Rav Moshe already discusses that issue and anyone could look over there. Rav Moshe talks about whether you should assume that an animal that was tortured in order to become a certain way, whether we should assume that one is not allowed to eat such an animal. putting that issue aside, there has been a recent issue the last 10 years that's been raised, which is the following, and I'll quote because I looked it up to make sure I had the facts correct. So it says, recently an issue has come to light and should give the kosher consumer pause before indulging in veal. Why? Calves are not fed milk, but are nourished instead with a uniform diet consisting of specially derived formula intended to produce the whitish color, taste, and texture prized in veal. Okay, now what is this formula made of? These calves do not eat any grain, and their sole sustenance comes from the formula. We have recently learned that although the composition of feed varies between companies, the formula typically contains 15 to 22% fat, which can consist of lard, tallow, beef fat, or a combination of both, and coconut oil. Okay? Imagine that. The fat is cooked with various milk... So what's wrong? So you say it's just a small portion of the formula. Now, here we go. The fat is cooked with various milk products as well as vegetable proteins, minimal... What? So it's a Yisurei Hanah. In effect, then, the calves are raised on non-kosher formula. So what? So therefore what? So what's the problem? So just to give a drop of background before we dive in, Ma'ariv, the Gemara says in Avodah Zarah, Daf Mem, Tesemet Aleph, Behemah Shenis Patma, Kol Yemechayem, Yisurei Avodah Zarah. If you have an animal that eats its whole life, its sustenance comes from Avodah Zarah. Let's say you have an Avodah Zarah tree that's giving off fruit or whatever it is, and the animal lives solely off this Avodah Zarah. The Gemara says that's Aser B'Hanah. That's all, you're not allowed to eat that animal. Why? Because the animal became a big animal as a result of the Yisurei Hanah. The Ramah in Yerodeah Siman Samach extends this Gemara based on a Gemara in Temura Daf Lamed Aleph. So the Ramah extends this principle and he says, not only if the animal ate Yisurei Hanah, which is Avodah Zarah its whole life, but if the animal ate any Yisurei Hanah or Machalas Asuros, if the animal is being raised solely on a diet of Machalas Asuros, this animal becomes Asur. Why? Because we look at it as if the reason why the animal is fatter is only because it has Yisurei Hanah inside of it. It has Yisurei Achila, it has Machalas Asuros. So based on that, there are Ma Paskins clearly in Siman Samach and Yerodeah. One would not be permitted to eat an animal which has been totally sustained by Yisurei Hanah or by Machalas Asuros. The Shach on the spot disagrees, and the Shach says, well, where is the Ramah coming from? The Gemara is not so clear. Tosis in Temura Daf Lamed Aleph has a suffix. Where does the Ramah dream up of this Chiddush to say that we should extend the principle so far and make it such an overarching principle when it comes to human consumption? So the Ramah himself believes, the Shach himself believes that no, the only time we assume that an animal who ate something usher, we are not allowed to eat that animal, that's only if the animal ate Yisurei Hanah. Why? Because Yisurei Hanah, I am not allowed to derive any benefit from. So therefore, by eating this animal, I am having benefit because the animal became fatter, became better. So now I'm not allowed to eat such an animal. However, if all the animal ate, the Shach says, if all the animal ate is Machalas Asuros, like in some of these cases, if all the animal ate is Machalas Asuros, so then we assume that Machalas Asuros alone is not enough to aser this animal because I'm not going to taste that Machalas Asuros once I eat the animal. It changes, it's an Isser Shanashtana, it changes so many times over, and it turns into fat, it turns into meat, it turns into a different portion of the animal. So therefore, when we think about the Shaila, when we talk about this Stira and Shulchan Aruch by Neres Chanukah, and we think about the Chabas Das's answer, the Chabas Das says there's a differentiation between Machalas Asuros and Yisurei Hanah. By Yisurei Hanah, we always have to look, bottom line, is there more volume? Am I getting Hanah? Then it's Asur. By Machalas Asuros, we think about the bottom line, am I actually tasting it? So therefore, that would be permissible. However, that brings into question this issue of veal. Should we assume that by veal as well, there is some sort of differentiation between an animal that lives its entire life just on Machalas Asuros, or an animal that lives its entire life on Yisurei Hanah? Maybe another time we'll get more into that Shiloh, but it's something to think about.